from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. It's Saturday, January 31st. So I have some good news for bird lovers and outdoor enthusiasts, and it's that there's still time to see the migrating bald eagles that seek shelter and food along the Upper Delaware River. This week, Rosie Starr sits down with Don Hamilton. He's a retired National Park Service Resource Program Manager, about what draws eagles to the area and where they're headed next.
I've always thought it was quite amazing how far some of these birds come from to this important wintering habitat we have here.
Plus, Keith Hubbard's weekly Star Talk report. Also share some events from our community calendar, including a fun snowshoe trail walk in Mamikating. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The federal government is shut down again, but unlike the record-long shutdown last fall, this funding lapse doesn't affect the entire government and could last only a few days. Lawmakers remain at odds over additional guardrails on federal immigration officers following the shooting deaths of two U.S. citizens in Minneapolis this month. NPR's Sam Greenglass reports.
Democrats are demanding a suite of changes like requiring judicial warrants for immigration raids, ensuring impartial investigations and accountability after incidents, and mandating immigration officers wear body cameras and remove their masks. Democrats feel emboldened because they think the public agrees with them. And even more than the last shutdown debate over those health subsidies last fall, what's unfolded in Minneapolis maybe speaks to something more fundamental about the country at this moment.
That's NPR Sam Greenglass reporting. As part of a national day of protest against federal immigration enforcement, nurses gathered outside the largest hospital in Maine to remember one of their own. Nicole Ogrosko from Maine Public Radio reports.
Nurses and other supporters packed outside Maine Medical Center in Portland to remember Alex Preddy, the VA nurse who was killed by federal agents last weekend in Minneapolis. Nurse Taylor Westcott says Preddy's death hit especially hard, as more than 200 people were recently arrested in Maine during a multi-day immigration enforcement surge.
And it seems like it can't get worse. And then that news came and it felt like a physical gut punch.
Though Immigration and Customs Enforcement has reportedly wrapped up a large-scale operation in Maine, Westcott says patients and healthcare workers are still afraid to come to the hospital. For NPR News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco in Portland, Maine.
The U.S. is moving ahead with a military buildup for a new round of strikes against Iran. Officials in Tehran, meanwhile, say if the country is attacked, it will hit hard at U.S. interests in the Middle East. NPR's Greg Myrie reports on the possible showdown.
The U.S. military now has an aircraft carrier, additional ships, and dozens of warplanes within striking distance of Iran. President Trump remains noncommittal about whether he'll order an attack. But speaking of Iran, he said, quote, "We'll see what happens. I can say this, they do want to make a deal." However, Iran's foreign minister says his country won't negotiate while it's being threatened. Iran has an arsenal of ballistic missiles and says that if attacked, it will strike U.S. targets in the region. The U.S. and Israel bombed Iran's nuclear facilities for 12 days last June. Trump is not saying what the U.S. might hit in a future attack. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Kimberly Izarm. Lawmakers across the Catskills are pushing back against growing immigration raids across the country. New York's 18th Congressional District Representative Pat Ryan strongly opposed the proposed ICE facility in Orange County at a press conference on Thursday.
My message to Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem and Trump and ICE is simple. Stay the out of the Hudson Valley. We don't want you here. We don't need you here. We know how to keep ourselves safe. We know how to support each other.
Ryan launched a petition in January to block the facility in Chester, New York, which he says now has more than 20,000 signatures. Nationally, Democrats are calling for immigration reforms. The Senate approved a short-term spending package on Friday that extends the Department of Homeland Security funding for 2 weeks while Congress negotiates broader immigration enforcement reforms. The House still must approve the bills to avoid further impacts of the government shutdown. New York's 19th Congressional District Representative Josh Riley said the immigration raids and protests underscore how broken the immigration system is. But he's hopeful that Congress can find common ground and push the package forward.
My expectation, what I'm going to be pushing for, is for those things that we can agree on and that have broad bipartisan support, let's get those done. And then let's focus on the debate that we need to have over immigration reform.
The House is expected to return to session on Monday. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Pew Charitable Trusts, sharing about the state of housing in America on the After the Fact podcast, available at pewtrusts.org/afterthefact, and the Doris Duke Foundation.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izarm. Well, last weekend, oh my goodness, was a doozy with the winter storm. I hope that everyone was safe and hopefully as warm as one can be during the winter storm. I know that for me, I really just stayed inside for most of the time. I did go out for a little bit to get some fresh air and walk through the woods behind my home, but for the most part was hunkered down indoors. And just a quick recap of the storm, the height of the snowstorm settled on Monday afternoon for many, with folks across the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania getting anywhere between 10 to 20 inches of snow. I was, you know, watching the chatter come in on social media and whatnot, and people were saying that we haven't had snow like this in some time. So it is definitely a Catskills winter here. Keep in mind that it is still very cold following the storm, with another Arctic blast expected this weekend. So it is recommended by forecasters to still practice caution on the roads. And if you can, check in on your neighbors, especially your elder and more vulnerable neighbors, to make sure that they're okay. We're starting this morning remembering the beautiful life of Agnes Van Putt. She was a beloved fixture of Livingston Manor's fly fishing community and known for her warm baked goods and legendary work ethic. She died on January 21st, 2026, at the age of 109 years old. Radio Catskill's Tim Bruno spoke with Agnes's daughter-in-law, Judy Van Putt, on Radio Chatskill earlier this week about some of her fondest memories.
Can you share a little bit about what some of your first memories of Agnes were and what made her such a beloved presence in your life?
Well, it was a long time ago. I was fortunate to have gotten to know Agnes when I was in my early 20s and fell in love with her son, Ed Van Putt, and we married, and I had Agnes in my life for 48 years, and they were wonderful. She was an enigma. She was tough and fair and kind and just filled with love. Anything was okay. Anything that someone did, whether it was an errand child, she would be quick to scold them, but always with love. And was just helpful. She taught me so many domestic things to do. We actually went and picked grapes together every year. We would go to the Finger Lakes and we made jam and pickles and jellies. And but it was her heart. She gave love in so many ways. So often it was with food, But if you were in Agnes's net, which extended very wide, you certainly felt the warmth of her love.
Yeah, her life touched generations of people in Livingston Manor and beyond. You are graciously taking some time out of some family time here. You're preparing for a special family memorial tomorrow, and you've got family staying with you. You're cooking as you go through this memories. Is there any story or memory that best captures Agnes's spirit or her humor or her heart that you want to share?
Often we would be traveling someplace or doing errands. She became my mom. I had my own mom for 36 years, and as I mentioned, Agnes for 48, so we did pretty much everything together. And people would come up to her as she got older and said, "Agnes, what is your secret for staying alive for so long and being here so long?" And she says, "Well, I do whatever I like whenever I like, and I eat whatever I like whenever I like." And she was known, I would stop over in the evenings and she'd say, "Oh, I didn't feel like making dinner, but I had a banana split."
The family's planning a celebration of life at the Fly Fishing Center in August, a more public event. Details will be coming from that, but what do you hope people take away from honoring her in that way later?
Just a little piece of her kindness and her love and joy that they were able to share in this remarkable life that she had.
Thank you so much to Tim and Judy for such a beautiful remembrance of Agnes Van Putt's life. I offer my deepest condolences to the entire family and really appreciate Judy dearly for sharing some of her favorite and such beautiful memories. Now, into our feature for this morning's show. Bird lovers and outdoor enthusiasts are in luck because there is still time to see the migrating bald eagles along the Upper Delaware River. About 150 to 200 bald eagles come to our listening area in January until about mid-March. Farm and Country contributor Rosie Starr recently chatted with Don Hamilton. He's a retired National Park Service's Natural Resources Program Manager, and the two chatted in Narrowsburg about where these birds come from and where they're headed next.
We are really fortunate to have this abundance of bald eagles here on the Delaware River, with even more birds here in the winter than our summer breeding population, and the wonderful viewing opportunities available to us now. I wanted to share a bit more information with listeners on why we have more bald eagles here now, and some golden eagles during the winter too, and where they come from, why this habitat in our region is so important to them. The Upper Delaware River Valley is one of the most important inland bald eagle wintering areas in the Northeast, based upon consistency of use and the number of birds coming here. We may have upwards of 200 bald eagles here in the winter, which really makes for some unique and marvelous viewing opportunities. But we need to remember that these birds are in survival mode this time of year. They're out there in the elements 24/7. Winter can be fatal for them. It's estimated that only about 50% of young eagles survive their first winter as they learn to fish and find other food and conserve calories in the process. That's why we have eagle etiquette guidelines in place, such as don't cause them to flush or fly, use more energy, observe them from a distance, stay in your car on some occasions if possible, and don't make unnecessary noise that could startle them. Why do we have so many bald eagles here, especially in the winter? Well, there's several reasons. The river always maintains some open water where they can fish, especially in the faster flowing areas. Fish are their primary food source, though they're opportunistic. They'll take waterfowl, small mammals, and also feed on carrion, such as dead deer. We've had some fatalities here from eagles feeding on a deer carcass on the shoulder of the road, flying up in front of a passing car, and getting clipped. So if you see a dead deer near the roadway and can safely get out and drag it away from the road, that's always a good thing. Anytime you have sheltered nighttime roosting habitat in close proximity to a food source like the river, that's very beneficial for these birds, helping them to conserve calories, survive the winter, and go into the breeding season in good shape. Eagles come here from some long distances. We know this because the National Park Service has partnered with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation in the past on studies that have involved capturing birds here and fitting them with satellite transmitters. And some of these birds, when you follow their movements in the late winter and spring, they disperse for their breeding territories, and some of them fly as far as 800 to 900 miles north into far northern Quebec, east of Hudson Bay, to Labrador and Newfoundland. Gosh, that's more than halfway to Greenland. Some don't go quite that far, maybe 500 to 600 miles, to Canada's maritime provinces of New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island. And I've always thought it was quite amazing how far some of these birds come from to this important wintering habitat we have here. This is one reason the Delaware River and its environs are so special and significant beyond its own watershed. It provides crucial winter habitat for bald and golden eagles when they're here in the winter and in survival mode. So it's important that we maintain that. Another way that the Delaware River is significant beyond its own watershed is that it provides historic spawning and rearing habitat to a suite of sea-run migratory fish, such as American shad and American eel. The Delaware is the last major river on the Atlantic coast on dam the length of its main stem. And that's really significant because when you think about the fact that 84% of historic stream habitat on the Atlantic coast is blocked by dams, that makes this river more significant and unique and especially important to some of these species. Fish like American shad bring ocean-derived nutrients into the system that benefit the river and its biota and provide an important food source for our resident bald eagles during a time of greatest provisioning need for their growing young. We have young in some of the nests here in mid-April. They're early nesters, and that's timed perfectly for the start of the shad run. And this interchange of fish between the Delaware River and the ocean maintains an important riverine marine ecological link and balance that has existed for thousands of years. This is how all rivers function before dams. One more reason that the Delaware system is significant beyond its own watershed is that it provides exceptionally high-quality drinking water to New York City, which is outside its watershed on the Hudson River. New York City gets its best quality water in its system of 19 water sources east and west of the Hudson from the Delaware River system reservoirs on the East Branch, West Branch, and Neversink. And I've had people tell me that one reason they think the pizza tastes so good in New York City is because of the water. That may be true. One more reason to appreciate it. I just want to emphasize that the Upper Delaware River, its upper watershed, has very significant ecological integrity. This is part of a life support system that sustains us, and this natural capital or natural resources provides ecosystem services that we could not easily or inexpensively re-engineer. New York City, on their east of Hudson water supply system, has a water filtration plant on the Croton River that cost $7 to $8 billion to construct. It costs a lot to operate and push water through filters. And New York City learned a long time ago that they get way more bang for their buck by incentivizing land use practices above their reservoirs, so that they don't have to build a filtration plant on the other end of the pipe. And that's the case with the water from the Delaware system. This water is essentially unfiltered and a very valuable resource.
Don, I appreciate the comprehensive overview of eagles in our area. And I heard you mention that the young eagles are born in the spring. And from what I've learned, they fledge about late spring going into the summer. And they also have a fierce ability to see. Their vision is very good. They see in color. I was wondering if you can share with us some thoughts on why they became the symbol for America. We're going into celebrating 250 years of the United States of America. Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to close and share with us about this?
I do, Rosie. And I think in light of us approaching our nation's 250th birthday, I wanted to share some of my thoughts about how important these iconic birds are and the wild landscapes they come from. I thought this should be entitled Bald Eagles, Inspiring the Founding Fathers and Present and Future Generations as well. In seeking a national symbol to represent the fledgling nation that our founding fathers had such great hopes for, they had to look no farther than the Delaware River flowing past a growing Philadelphia. The bald eagle, native only to North America, exemplified qualities that inspired and moved those who viewed it: strength, freedom, character, a certain wild nobility. And so the Second Continental Congress in 1782 declared it our national symbol. The bald eagle has served well as a living symbol for our nation's freedom and spirit, and has gone on to play a significant role in American art, architecture, folklore, and music, and has become one of the most recognizable symbols in the world. But perhaps what this majestic bird embodies more, for some of us who view it, are the wild and unspoiled landscapes from which it evolved, which it prefers, and where it is most numerous. It's in these settings that we're most likely able to see it catch fish with the finely honed skills developed over eons, raise its young, interact with others of its kind, and grace us with its presence. We're fortunate to have such areas fairly accessible to us here on the Upper Delaware River, where we can, from a river access, a bald eagle viewing bus trip, or on a half-day float trip on the river, slip fairly unobtrusively into their domain and witness bald eagles going about their lives in a relatively unspoiled landscape. We as Americans have long had high regard for the values instilled by these wild places. American literature from authors such as Washington Irving, William Cullen Bryant, James Fenimore Cooper, Henry David Thoreau, and Zane Grey is replete with depictions of wild land as having a positive moral influence, being a source of beauty and inspiration, and providing a setting for exciting adventures. Our American heritage is one of westward migration and settlement and encounters with the wilderness. And the challenges and experiences encountered in these expanses have long been viewed as having had a favorable influence on our character. Just as our founding fathers recognized and gave tribute to the values embodied in a bird shaped and influenced by its wild surroundings, some of today's more enlightened leaders have acknowledged the intrinsic value of such undeveloped places and their nature to a modern society. We need a balance between the cultivated and the wild. We need a reminder from whence we came. And in conserving and protecting some of these areas and providing some wild habitats suitable for bald eagles and their progeny, we've assured the next human generation a value and a gift and a source of inspiration and awe that can't be duplicated by any theme park. So I just wanted to remind the listeners how fortunate we are to have a river like this, surrounded by a relatively undeveloped landscape, that produces high-quality water and natural resources. The upper basin of the Delaware is still about 75% forested and supports these majestic bald eagles and an abundance of other wildlife. We have something truly special here. The Delaware River is a treasure. Seeing bald eagles in the wild is a real treat, and understanding that we're stewards here of this habitat that supports them And with that comes the responsibility to protect and care for it, is in turn something that will make us better, healthier humans.
Don, thank you so much. In closing, let's remind folks of how they can be stewards as individuals or in groups. What would you suggest they do to find out more information and get involved?
Well, they can support conservation organizations like Delaware Highlands Conservancy, which does a lot to get conservation easements in place that will help protect this landscape into the future. Support agencies like the National Park Service here. Let your elected representatives know what you care about and your views on these topics, whether it's protecting wild landscapes, water quality. There are changes being proposed to the Clean Water Act that could affect a river like this. How you envision this resource being potentially impacted by climate change, and how you can maybe lower your carbon footprint to have less of an impact on that. There are really a myriad of ways we can get involved, take an interest in these issues, and let our elected representatives know how you feel and what you value and what you want to see protected into the future.
And I would like to add another organization that works hard on keeping our water clean is Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. For Radio Catskill and Farm and Country, this is Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to Rosie for that report. And just a reminder for folks who would like more of a guided tour when it comes to eagle watching, the Delaware Highlands Conservancy still has a few eagle watching bus tours. I actually spoke to some of the volunteers a few weeks ago, and they're so, so knowledgeable about not only eagle watching, but also just about our region and the environment and terrain that eagles find themselves in during this time of year. So if you're looking for something a little bit more guided, there's still two more bus tours left. It's going to be on February 7th and February 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can find more information at DelawareHighlands.org. Up next, you know what time it is, this week's Star Talk Report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Throughout February and extending into early May, the opportunity will exist to see a seasonal phenomenon known as zodiacal light. Zodiacal light is a hazy pyramid of light rising from the western horizon after sunset. This light will be visible low in the western sky up to an hour after twilight. Zodiacal light is sunlight that is being reflected off dust grains in the inner solar system. These dust grains spread out along the ecliptic and are thought to be the remnants of the process that created Earth and the other planets in our solar system 4.5 billion years ago. The grains of dust cannot be seen individually. Rather, their tiny outputs of light combine to create a faint glow. This hazy, faint, pyramid-shaped glow is milkier in appearance than the Milky Way. Dark skies are needed to see the zodiacal light. The full moon will be tomorrow, making the sky too bright to see the zodiacal light. Conditions will be more favorable at the end of the week than at the week's beginning. Since zodiacal light is faint, it helps to use a trick known as averted vision. Averted vision is looking slightly off from where you are wanting to look. The most sensitive part of the retina is not in the center, but along the outer edge. Looking off allows the light to hit the most sensitive part of your retina, increasing the chance of seeing the object. Be sure to look to the west just after nightfall this week to try to spy the zodiacal light. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks so much to Keith for that report. A few upcoming events from our community calendar as we move into the weekend. On Wednesday, February 4th, the Wayne County Public Library in Honesdale presents Good Nutrition Equals Health from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. With the cold and flu season upon us, the program will offer information about nutrient-dense food and other strategies to help boost immune health.